It's estimated that over 27,000 double-decker buses worth of clothes end up in landfill every year in the UK alone. With the ever-increasing production of clothing that shows no signs of stopping, many have been rightly calling for a circular economy to urgently reduce the fashion world's environmental impact. Currently, the onus is on the consumer to recycle, and while brands have a desire to engage in recycling, the challenge has always been how. Welcome to Inside Retail, the podcast brought to you by Edited, the world's leading AI-driven retail intelligence platform. In this podcast, we delve into the current retail landscape, uncovering the opportunities and challenges it's facing. With me, Grace Hill. The MacArthur Foundation projects that circular models could grow from 3.5% of the global fashion market today to 23% by 2030. And today's guest is a leading voice in this space, Simon Platts. Simon most recently held the position of Responsible Sourcing and ESG Director at ASOS, but left after 10 years to co-found Recom. Recom is a white-label platform that allows brands to recycle and resell responsibly, quickly and complexity-free within their own brand environment. So brands don't need to figure out their own recycling system. Recom does it quietly for them. I asked Simon about the current mindset of mass market organizations, the challenges of responsible sourcing, and how Recom's platform is hoping to reduce fashion's footprint and give products a longer life. Plus, we discuss how Recom embraces the power of technology to help brands and retailers create a full ESG audit and data trail. Well, Simon, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
No problem. Good to be here.
So what I would love to do is just get into it and, you know, learn a little bit more about your background and how you came to work in the fashion industry or the retail industry.
Sure. Well, my journey started back in 1985 when I got a Saturday job in Next back in 1985. And I loved it. I'd always loved fashion. And I tried my best to be as fashionable as I could. Bear in mind, this is the mid-80s. So we're talking Spandau Ballet, Human League. Sheffield had quite a big music scene going on. So with like the Human League, ABC, Heaven 17. And I loved it. And I'd love fashion, but I couldn't always afford the latest trends. So and you've got to bear in mind that back then again, Next had just started. And before, you know, there were Burton's, there was M&S, but it wasn't that kind of mass, you know, a capability to give fashion to someone like me at an affordable price. You had to either step up to a big brand or you went to a very low level. Hence where Next came in and filled that gap and did a great job in it. What it did make me realize was that I enjoyed it so much that I wanted to go further into fashion. One of the buying directors or the head of buying approached me one day, and I got taken on as a trainee buyer. Quite quickly promoted. I was started on shirts and ties, and I worked through many different product categories. And eventually, after about 16 years with Next now, I moved into the sourcing department, and we had lots of different offices around the world where we were sourcing products. And we had it was kind of a really good part of my career at Next that got me ready for the next stage, if you like.
Yeah.
After 19 years, I decided to leave, and I'd always made sure, and I think Next, even today, it's a great place to do your kind of base learning, if you like, because you're brought up through a mentality, and that mentality is about fairness, it's about cooperation, it's about understanding, it's about knowledge, it's about visibility and transparency. And that was something that I took through my whole career and still hold dear today, is that, you know, relationships are really, really important. And I guess that relates to planet as well, in terms of what I was like as a kid, you know, in the outdoors, sports. I had this affinity and this empathy for, you know, I love this, everything I've got around me. I want to make sure it stays like this and is not damaged. So, you know, that naturally led me towards moving into that, not just doing it as part of my day-to-day, but actually moving that to become part of what I eventually took when, just over 10 years ago, I took the role at ASOS.
Yes, because you were at ASOS for a huge amount of time as well as their responsible sourcing director. Is that right?
Correct, yeah.
What did that entail?
Well, it came from a conversation with another old colleague of mine who approached me about a role at ASOS, which initially was sourcing. And I was chatting with this person saying, well, look, Yes, I understand where clothes come from. And I was looking at the model, very different to the bricks and mortar model, if you like. So it needed to be quicker, less wasteful, less markdown, more fashionable, more often, you know, eat, sleep, repeat job, you know, keep it going. And so, yeah, I understand how that needs to be sourced, and it's quite different to the traditional model. But I was keen to ask very quickly, where is ASOS on its journey around how it engages from a human rights and its supply base, but also from its sort of planetary values in terms of where is it looking around its material sustainability? So I agreed with ASOS that I'd take the role if we encompassed sourcing and the ethical and the sustainability side, so that when we were looking for new suppliers and new factories and new materials, we would do it understanding that they also need to ensure that we were compliant with not just law, but actually compliant with what our values were. But also understand that actually, you know, again, being more sustainable and being commercial don't need to be at two different odds. I did that within ASOS. We didn't need to have one department trying to find, you know, new factories cheaper than anywhere else, and another department trying to ensure that they were being, you know, treated fairly. We needed to do it together so that we created, you know, hence responsible sourcing.
And why is transparency, I guess from your point of view, why is that such a difficult goal to achieve in fashion and in retail?
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and make excuses, but I'll tell you that real information is that it's very complex, and it's something that's, it's a network, and it's an established network. It is a case of unraveling something. It's not like you're starting, okay, we're going to grow cotton, let's go and find a cotton farm and grow some cotton, oh, and then let's find someone to gin it and spin it and dye it, and let's build a supply chain. It's been established, it's grown exponentially, and with little control, with little regulation, and with very little awareness for what actually is going on. And I guess that's why fashion is now, you know, being perceived as a very, you know, not very, well, certainly not regulated, but not a particularly environmentally or socially responsible business, because it's done what it's done.
Yeah, absolutely. It is such a complex network, especially as well when you're talking about the pace and the scale of products that are coming to market as well, and kind of keeping up with all of that and actually understanding to a granular detail where do all of these products come from.
Yeah, but it needs to be done. It's not something you can skirt around now. And it's not something that should be skirted around, because legislation will just come down on you like a ton of bricks. It's now, I would argue, it's in our faces now as an industry. And the industry moves, like you said, very, very quickly. So something you're talking about that's 2 years away, that's something you need to be dealing with and addressing now. And as I say, you need to have that from a responsibility point of view, but you'll need that from a commercial point of view, because you don't get this right, the taxes and the legislative changes that will come will inhibit or prohibit your ability to sell your product. And that's not just clothing, any kind of product. If you can't give it the cadence, then they will say, I'm sorry. And part of that cadence will be having an end producer responsibility as well, which is kind of what we'll talk about a little bit later, which is, well, you've sold it into my country, it's finished the end of its existing life, and now it needs to be recovered and returned into what is ultimately becoming what's known as the circular economy. So no, these are all things that are changing, and that's why they're commercially valuable and not just right.
Nice to have. Yeah, exactly.
You know, they're not just a nice to have. You know, these are essential tools that you'll need to be able to operate as a business.
As you said, there's huge commercial impacts on the, you know, as you said, not just the horizon, but are, you know, facing retailers very, very soon if they're not getting on board with the proposed changes that are upon us, as it were. But I guess in terms of kind of the mindset of retail organizations today, and just from your experience, obviously you talk to a huge amount of brands and retailers, and obviously your experience working for them, what is their mindset today, you know, when it comes to sustainability and also the legislative change that's ahead?
Well, you've got an industry that at the moment is quite stressed. I don't just mean as in physically, like, oh gosh, you know. I mean as in it's got all sorts going on within it. You've got businesses failing, you know, the high street's still struggling. Again, this is not just linked to clothing, but you know, it's still difficult to sell from bricks and mortar. There's some doing it really well and others not doing it so well. The e-commerce bubble, if you like, that's been around for the last 20 odd years, has started to leak. You know, there are other things going on now. There are new ways that customers shop, especially the younger customers, whether that be secondhand, whether that be rental. It's not just a case of going online or, you know, what was when ASOS started a computer or maybe 10 years ago, an app on your phone. It's a whole different way that customers now, and not necessarily the older customers. And if you look at, you know, I'm in my mid-50s, but I shop very differently to say a sort of 15 to 20 year old. I've got things that I've had for a long time. I mean, my problem would be is I don't let anything go, and I should, because then I could get it back into a circular economy. But I don't buy as much now, but I do refresh items as I need them. So there are different shoppers that have got different behaviors, and obviously as a brand you need to be aware of who your customer is and how they're behaving. But what you also need to be aware of is that all these customers now are starting to think. You don't just have to be in the industry to be thinking about, well, what am I buying? Who made that? Why is it so cheap? The questions are being asked, but especially by the younger customers that are coming through, that are living through an education, not only in their schools, but through social media, through the places that they inhabit, if you like, whether it be gaming, the metaverse, TikTok. You know, they're learning a lot about what's going on. They're starting to ask questions. So there's almost a third reason why you should be behaving in a responsible way around how you do things. Not only is it is responsible and commercial, but actually it's what your customers are going to demand. If you don't do this, they're going to stop shopping with you. Now, there'll be people listening to this, yeah, but these kids are buying stuff and they Instagram and TikTok, and you know, they want newness and newness and newness. And I do think there's a part for the consumer to play in how we are going to change our industry to be a more wholesome industry, because it's an industry that should be. It's all over the world. We all love fashion. Fashion empowers us. It allows us to be our best self. It allows us to express ourselves and gives us that confidence to be who we want to be. So why would we not want that? Well, the only reason would be is that by doing that, we destroy people and planet. So that can't be a thing. You know, as an economy globally, let alone here in the UK, it's billions and billions of people and pounds and millions of people's lives, but these lives need to be respected, and they need to be part of this economy, if you like, the whole supply chain, the value chain. And there's a lot to be done in that, but customers will expect that. They'll want to know that nobody was harmed, no one was mistreated, or that the products they're wearing weren't dyed with harmful chemicals that are destroying the rivers and the oceans and so on.
I think that's an interesting point, because obviously we're extremely passionate about customer centricity and really putting your customer at every point in the value chain and really understanding what it is that they want. I guess how, from your experience within retail head offices and your experience of in your current role, how are those businesses approaching the customer demands when it comes to wanting a more sustainable product? And how is that impacting, you know, their mindset and their workflow?
Well, again, I can't speak for every individual brand that's out there, because there are some that you could argue have customers who don't care that much and just want stuff cheap. And they seem to be doing very, very well. And there are others that are trying to do a lot in this space. And because it's still an emerging space, a lot of the tech, the innovation, the things that will help the industry move to this better place are still either in the lab or in conceptual form, or they're in their infancy, they're in pilots. Not everything, and all of those things are moving really, really quickly now. So I feel optimistic about the speed of change coming in the coming years. I don't feel like, oh, we're doomed and this is not going to work. Tech and innovation is coming to support what the industry is trying to do. And I think those customers that are not as caring at the moment will start to find that they'll be the ones that aren't cool, actually. And I think that their behavior needs to be considered, because ultimately, if the customer wants something, the brand will try and service that customer. And what the brands are doing right now is they know the industry needs to be done in a different way, again, both responsibly and commercially. So it's not a challenge, well, we don't want to do that. They do want to do it, but it's finding that balance between, I guess, profit and purpose. It's great having a purpose, but if you don't have the profit to deliver it, then you've got no business. So it's always about trying to find, well, how do we do this? the balance is we can't do things that are harmful to people and planet. So there's not a question around that. But how do we bring that into our business? How do we educate that customer about what this looks like and why, what their role is to play in this so that we can actually move on with this together? There's a huge piece around education, not just for the brands and the retailers, but for the consumers as well. And that's quite complex and difficult. And not every customer wants to hear a lecture on why cotton should be grown like this and not like this, and why their product is this price and not this price. But we're going to have to go through that pain. We're going to have to make sure that that customers understand why things are what they are within the industry, so that they understand that they're part to play in this.
I really like that concept of profit and purpose. What immediate things could retailers change today that could help bring those two closer together?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that retailers are looking at right now. Profitability is what wins the game. So having the right product at the right time for the customer, not overbuying. You know, there are a couple of big issues with the current way that the world buys its clothes. I mean, brands, retailers, everyone is. It buys a lot of stuff that it doesn't sell, and it's trying to feed a very, very hungry consumer. So there's overproduction, and then there's the overconsumption argument. They're two very different things. But with all the tech innovation, developments that are happening, there are enablers now, really good enablers, that are allowing brands to be smarter at the front end. So that is cutting down on overproduction, being able to source in a different way that gets the product the customers want when they want it, and then moves it on rather than sitting on a load of markdown. We've gone through a period where a lot of brands have been caught with a lot of stock that they haven't sold. And therefore the idea of, well, look, let's just get it as much as we can at the cheapest price we can, that was, it was never really a profitable. I mean, the idea would be design it, sell it, then buy it. And again, if you look at some of the tech innovation like Corneet, which is a digital printing solution, have some incredible tech that would allow you to literally, you know, through avatar, through the tech in showing a customer what their product could look like on themselves. Yeah, I really like that print. I really like that. Great, press that. That garment is made for you, almost made, you know, specifically for you, and it's delivered within a couple of days, and therefore you've bought one and sold one. Well, there's nothing much more profitable than buying one and selling one. It's no good buying 1,000 and not selling 400, because your profit is dramatically reduced. So at the front end, there is a massive amount of work going on by, I would say, every brand out there to get the best, most appropriate price they can get, fit into the model of how and what their customers need when they need it. The other argument, which is around the consumption, you know, with e-commerce, with the fact that you can do it, you know, so quick, we shouldn't be consuming as much. And that's a challenge for us as a species. You know, do we need as much as quick as we always need it? And that, again, that goes for food, that goes for clothing, that goes for cars, that goes for iPhones or mobile phones, that goes for anything. Do we need as much stuff? And that's a dilemma we face as a human race.
Yes. Sadly not. And I think we've been trained and conditioned over time, right, to think with that maybe this is something we need.
Well, it's been made so easy, yeah. It's infinite. You can have what you want when you want it, disregard for wherever it might come from. You know, we talk about, people say 1.5, 2. I've heard even, you know, we need 2 more planets. We need 2 more Earths to sustain what we actually want to continue to do. And it's just not going to be a thing.
Yeah. You've mentioned technology and innovation a number of times already. So I'd love to kind of move on into, you know, the space that you're currently in. Obviously, you left ASOS to join Tom to co-found Recom. Obviously, you have some incredibly impressive board advisors too, with Caroline Rush from the British Fashion Council. You know, we'd love to hear more about, you know, what Recom does and what challenges the business is looking to solve.
Yeah, well, I left ASOS earlier on this year. I'd met Tom last year, actually. As part of my role, I was looking for different solutions, you know, whether it was what other models could we look into, whether it be rental, you know, resale. We already had a platform called Marketplace. And I was looking at models and tools that were going to help me with recovering old products, with transparency. Product passports are coming down the road. You know, I was always looking at different solutions. There are a lot of people out there that are taking back clothes to resell them. And absolutely, if we've got, like, you know, I've had this T-shirt that I'm wearing today for about 15 years, and I'll have it for another 15, 20. It's just, you know, it's just something I'll have, so that's fine. But what if I didn't want it? Well, if it's not got any holes in it, it's not damaged, I could resell that, and it should. You know, so much energy and effort went into creating the products we're wearing today that actually, if you don't want them and they're still fit for purpose, you should absolutely be passing them on to friends or selling them or just giving them their next life. Charity shops is another conversation. We know, you know, look, ultimately, if we're really blunt about charities want money. Yeah, they want money to support their charity. How do they do that? Lots of different ways. One of them is charity shops. They don't want charity shops, but they have to have them because it helps them bring some income in. So what, you know, a charity shop would want cash, wouldn't want clothes, wouldn't want old things, but they do give another level of keeping clothes, you know, alive. But they also have a lot of product that they get that they can't do anything with. And this has now fallen into, you know, goes into this bit of a black hole and ends up where, you know, wherever in the world. That's an issue that I know the shop, the charity shops, but also the brands are accountable for as well. You can't just pass it on one level down the line and say, well, I'm sorry, I've given it them, I don't care where it goes anymore. No, sorry, that doesn't...
It's end-to-end responsibility.
If your label's found washed up on a beach in Africa and you say, well, I gave it to a charity shop, I didn't do that. Well, sorry. It's not good enough.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because I've recently had conversations about charity shops, and I'm actually in, you know, a very keen vinted stage of my life and reselling rebuying. And I've actually made the choice to do that versus going to a charity shop, which maybe I would have done previously, because I think I wasn't quite aware of maybe what was actually happening.
Yeah. Well, when Tom came to me with Recom, it wasn't solely about, oh, we're going to set up a business that's going to be recovering old clothes. We're going to clean them all up and then sell them again, which is great. Don't get me, you know, please don't get me wrong. Charity shops, resale models are a part of that ecosystem. And if that product is like I say, is still, let's just say, performing, if it still works, then why break it down? You shouldn't. You should keep it alive as long as possible and use whatever options you've got. But what Recom and what Tom spoke to me about was kind of a white label platform solution. Now, I know every brand out there will be wrestling now with, well, we've got to get more recycled materials into our new fabrics. How are we going to do that? Well, one option would be to start getting back some of that material that you've put out there. And there's a bit of a legacy to deal with, because a lot of the stuff that's out there is very complex when it comes to recycling and therefore of very low value. So it may be that when it comes back, they can't necessarily get it back into their own product chain, but they can get it back into a, let's call it, downcycled. So it may be that old mixed fibers end up being used for insulation and so on, but it's still keeping it away from landfill. Now, the ideal is obviously whatever we can get back from the consumers at the end of its current life can be deconstructed and then fed back into the ecosystem and then be produced into new fibers and then knitted and woven into new yarns that can make new clothes or new furnishing fabrics. So that is the way it's trying to go. And there's a bit of cleaning up, if you like. But Recom was ultimately a solution, a platform solution that gives a brand the ability to take a white label solution, plug it in, customize it so that it's their brand. We actually launch in a couple of weeks with a well-known British brand in the UK, which would be really exciting. And they're using our platform. So that's the front end. So it's customized so that it looks like, you know, you're not going off. It's not like you're saying, hey, if you want to return your clothes, please go off to see Simon and he'll sort it out for us as a brand. And then you think it's all of a sudden you've sent that customer away. Whereas actually, what if you knew what that customer was returning? What if you could understand the value? What if you knew where that product was then going to go? What if you could then find out whether you could get back into that new material? What if you could incentivize
your customer? The data and the opportunities.
The data, it's massive. It's about, you know, it's about capturing. So it's about having a solution that gives you data, that gives you knowledge, but also at the back end, what I've been working on for the last few months behind the scenes, we're actually only finished closing funding. Literally kind of as we speak. And I've been talking to brands, been talking to investors about what we're trying to achieve here. I've also been talking to suppliers and those third parties that are going to be looking to take these materials and build up the back end so that if we get this product back, we can divide it, we can sort through it, and we can get it to the locations that are going to give it its next life. Now, there's two things that need to be sorted in this circularity economy that we talk about. One is dealing with the amount of stuff that's out there at the moment. And even though a lot of it is very low value, low grade, we still need to pick the rubbish up. And then the other big thing within circularity is the start point. When you start at 12 o'clock and you sit down with your design team and you're about to create a product, we need to be thinking now, and this is what brands are doing, and there's so much effort and energy going into this right now, which again gives me optimism that it's going in the right direction, is what are we designing here? How are we designing it for longevity, for reuse, for deconstruction, for its next life, and its next life ideally within our industry? Do we need it to be three different fiber mixes? Could we get made into a garment that still performs? Because what we don't want to do is get a great garment that's easy to deconstruct and recycle but falls apart after you've worn it three times. That's not going to fix the problem. But can we find and again, there's tons of innovation coming in fabrics on how we're going to be able to do this, that you can get the same look, the same appearance, the same colors, the same performance, but you don't need to have 5-6 fibers in it. And actually those fibers that you do choose, we've made the yarn so that it's easier to deconstruct it at the end of its life. And then we know where that can go to be deconstructed and sent to the pulp and then made into a new fiber. So it's kind of like, there's a front end piece and a back end piece, and they're both really, really important right now.
So just to kind of explain back then my understanding, so obviously it's taking the capabilities and the abilities for brands and retailers to be able to keep that process in-house through the platform and the solution that you offer them.
That's it. It gives them the ability to create something that's customer facing, but then they get all the data, they get all the, whether it's return customers, we're looking, you know, one great one for us, I think, is going to be footwear. Now, footwear, generally, unless you're talking Jimmy Choo or something like that, where it probably will, you know, it's only worn a few times and maybe it is sold and it retains its value. But there's a lot of footwear that's produced that gets worn out, or aspects of that footwear get worn out. Usually it's the sole, sometimes it may be the upper, but ultimately it's not going to be used again. And where does it go? It usually goes in the bin, or you know, at best it gets chucked in a recycle bin somewhere and then gets sorted through, and then it gets chucked in another bin because it can't be reused. So we're looking at a solution there where we can take footwear back, break down all the componentry of the footwear, and then get those components out the other side, and then look at how we can use those components, whether it be the rubber, the metal, the materials, back into new products. And that's what excites me about this. And when Tom first approached me, I thought, you've got something here. As a brand, I would want the platform. I would want the solution. And I came in and I guess added, actually, you've got the front end. I want to help build out the back end, and we can actually start to create what is a fully circular solution. It's not perfect. This is about progress, not perfection. You know, in this way of moving and becoming more sustainable, it's about not being afraid to get moving.
And with those products, so say, you know, customer comes to brand and recycles that product, and obviously you are supporting the brand on the back end and giving them the capabilities to recycle those products. Do they then have the ability to then use those materials in their own production and bring it back into their product life cycle?
Correct. That's the end game, if you like. That's the absolute, what we're trying to achieve here is that if you're recovering products and you're getting that back into these, and there are some incredible facilities all over the world that are now able to break down different fabrics. As I say, some of it's more complex than others, but the scale is building. The products that are coming in are easier to deconstruct. And then those recycling facilities are producing new yarn, or producing the pulp to create new yarn that's then going into new fibers. So you've got, for example, a business in Sweden called Renewcell, and they're producing a circulose yarn from old cotton garments. And that circulose fiber can then go into new yarns to be spun and then woven and knitted into new products. And, you know, with product passports coming up, you know, there's all these different things coming together. You're going to be at the stage where you'd be able to say and identify that, actually, Simon, your old Patagonia t-shirt that you sent back to us 8 months ago is now on sale on our platform. It's in a pair of jeans that we've bought from our supplier that's using the old cotton that was, and you know, you'd kind of just want to know that it's happening. I don't need to know exactly where it went personally, but I want to know that actually, if I do give something back that's going to be recycled, it'd be great to know that it's now got a new life as a pair of jeans or as a casual shirt or whatever. And again, it's value. Like I say, there's a lot to do and there's a lot of legacy to deal with. You know, we said right at the very beginning, transparency, there's still a lot of unraveling. Similarly, in this recovery world, recycle world, there's still a lot to be done, but it's getting done. Brands know it's coming, so they accelerate their ambition for it. So therefore, the innovators are creating things quicker and things are getting out of the lab and getting to scale quicker and quicker and quicker. So my hope is that what Recom does is gives any brand the ability to go technically to their customers and give them a route back in on any product. And it could be that they want to bolt on resale to that. We just want to make sure that, first of all, you're engaging with your customers and you are offering them the ability to recover products. We then look at the different outlets for where them products can go, and we'll continue to build that network behind the scenes. And then, if you like, through my 30 odd years in the industry, I'm ensuring that the supply base is talking with the recycle base, they're talking with brands, and we are actually creating this proper closed loop circle economy. It's no good just getting stuff back and it flittering off out into, you know, everything just becomes a, you know, insulation and so on. No, we need it back in our new products. So, you know, that is the real thing we're striving for.
And I guess, you know, incredible that, as you said, there are now solutions out there for, as you said earlier, retailers are extremely stressed in many different ways. And I think the ability to have a solution for them to be able to have a plug-in solution and not have to build this technology or capability in-house, that there are people that they can do.
Cost, is it? Yeah,
100%. A final point from me that I would love your thoughts and expertise on: what is the one thing that retailers should really be prioritizing when it comes to circularity today?
It's hard because there's more than one.
You can give me two.
If you give me two, it would be one, really understand and start to recover the things that are out there and look at how you get them back into the circle economy. Because that's, you can't avoid that. That is legacy, it's messy, it's complex, but it's still got to be addressed. And then the other, just as important, point to focus on with circularity is make sure that when we are starting to design a product, we start from the right place and we actually are starting with a view to what its next life is going to be after it has stayed alive in its current form for as long as possible. Circularity should not be about making things even easier to deconstruct and to recover, but making them less wearable and less performant, you know, not performing. That's absolutely the wrong thing. The two have to go hand in hand. So it's clearing up the back end and starting in a better place at the front end, which will help accelerate the back end side of things. And the one thing, if I was to say, you know, what should the brands be doing now, you know, when it comes to being more responsible and being better when it comes to ESG, would be to make a start. Don't wait until you've got all the answers. Don't be silent. Go and talk to your, you know, on ASOS, we were a platform. We sold over 900,000 brands and we used that platform to talk to those brands. We had they still do have a third party branded engagement program where they're collaborating and talking to each other about how they can do things better. And a word that I kind of stole from someone else, I don't know where I got it from, but anyway, I keep using it. It's called co-opetition. And this is about not just collaborating, not just talking, but working with your competitors to accelerate and build these solutions. I know that people like Puma and Under Armour are working together in the space of technology, innovation in materials. You know, there are a lot of brands out there now that are trying to work, you know, put their differences aside. I know in the food and drink industry, Britvic and Heineken years ago were like, we need more glass, recycled glass. And how are we going to do that? Well, instead of going off and playing in their own little corners and, you know, giving the middle finger to each other, they said, why don't we do something together so that we get the scale we need? And then that, you know, of course, I'm not going to tell you my orange juice recipe and da-da-da-da-da. So fight on the areas where you're going to fight. Fight on the who's got the best gene or who's got the best style. But don't fight on how we've got to the product and made sure that no one was harmed and that people were respected. That's not a competitive space. So work and collaborate and co-petition with brands and talk to your peers. This is happening, by the way. This is not something I'm saying that people are going to go, oh yeah, we might do that. No, it's happening. There is co-petition. There is collaboration. There's a load of amazing stuff going on. And I think we all just wish and hope that it's going to continue and it's just going to gather more and more momentum and it's going to become BAU. This needs to be at the heart of everything we do, doing things in a respectful and responsible way and creating that purpose, but delivering a profit alongside that is the way that any business should operate. And a customer should be looking to buy, whether it's a TV, a phone, a cup of coffee, or a shirt, from a company that it knows, because it's giving you that education, that this is what we stand for. And actually, if you want to ask, we can give cadence to all that. It's no good saying any of this and then not being able to back it all up.
Sure. Do it.
Do it, actually do it.
But yeah. I guess that goes back to like progress, not perfection.
It's progress,
and I think
absolutely.
That's, you know, and like you have to make a start. And I guess if I'm, you know, taking everything back, you know, profit and purpose, you know, as you said, bringing those together, being stronger together, but ultimately starting with more informed and better decision-making at the start and making sure you're choosing the right things at the first
very,
point
very
in
beginning.
The stage.
Yeah, exactly. I often I'm asked to like go into some of the unis and I work with the Fashion Retail Academy and talk to the students and, you know, go in there and they want to know stuff. And I say, right, who's working in design and da-da-da? And it's, I say, right, you, before you do anything, before you pick up your pen, your pencil, your look at your laptop, you start using Style 3D or whatever, think about what your customer is, where this is going to be made, how it's going to be shipped, transported, how many are you going to need to buy? You know, it's kind of like a wake-up call for designers. They're not just drawing pretty pictures of things that then get picked up and made into nice dresses, metaphorically speaking. They have a huge responsibility on their shoulders. And working within a team of a you know, designer, buyer, merch, garment technologists, fabric technologists, sourcing team, you know, you build that team around you. You can find what you need to get and that's right and relevant for your customers in a way that can deliver it to a customer in a profitable way for the brand and allow that brand to, you know, to move on and to progress and then deliver more and more purpose through having more and more profit. It's not just about the bottom line. A lot of brands, shareholders and so on, and you get into that complexity. But again, the shareholders, investors, they're looking to put their money into these companies that they know have got longevity because they're investing in what their future is going to be and not just here for today.
100%. I think that was an amazing takeaway about customer centricity and the responsibility that those retail teams do have, and actually not just thinking about new products that I can create, but what does a customer actually want and how can I integrate that into every step of the value chain and the life cycle. But Simon, thank you so much for joining us today. I feel like there's so many interesting things and I'd have loved to have heard you speak for.
I know, I could rabbit on for hours.
Thank you so much for listening to Inside Retail with me, Grace Hill. For more insights, head to our resources section on edited.com and follow the podcast so you don't miss an episode.